In a few minutes, a moment of musical history as it pertains to how much the government can borrow. From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Global Perspective on Business and Economics. We can now use the term of art correction to describe the stock market in Japan. The Nikkei fell just under 2% today, meaning it's down 10% from a recent peak, in this case in late December. It's the third down day in a row for the index, which had gone up 57% last year, fueled by the stimulus and reform policies known as Abenomics. Sometimes stock prices go up, sometimes they go down, but analysts are pointing to the currency jitters in emerging markets as the catalyst for the Nikkei's drop. Now let's check some more numbers. The FT 100 in London is down 0.25% right now. The DAX in Germany down 0.75% after the Dow fell nearly 1%, 149 points Friday. Stock index futures in the U.S. are down again this morning. The big money business in many parts of sub-Saharan Africa is mining, and that industry's annual conference is playing out today against a backdrop of labor tension in South Africa. The BBC's Lerato Mbele joins us from Cape Town. Good morning.
Good morning.
Give us a sense of that conference. We're talking about one of the major industries in sub-Saharan Africa.
Yes, as you can hear behind me, the conference is fully underway and mining executives are beginning to discuss issues which really impact the sector. Africa, as you know, is rich in commodities and resources. Explorers are very busy prospecting and looking for opportunities in countries such as Ivory Coast, in Mali, in Tanzania, in Ghana. Those who are looking for oil are in Sudan, in Angola, and other such areas. And of course, China, this new economic giant, is a major consumer of African resources. Never before has mining and the story of commodities been more relevant for Africa's growth and development than it is now. And unfortunately, on the downside, labor unrest has really been the blemish on the prospects and opportunities that exist.
Well, let me ask you about that. This big conference is playing out at a time where there is a major strike by platinum workers in South Africa.
Yes, platinum workers affiliated to AMCU, the Association of Mine Workers and Construction Union. So they're saying, we go deep below the Earth's surface to mine this resource. It sells at premium prices internationally. The least you can do is pay us what is decent. Unfortunately, though, platinum mining is a distressed sector. Many of these platinum mines have been underperforming. They are in a lot of debt. And then because of the economic downturn the world over, demand also slumps. So there are a variety of factors that make it almost impossible to meet the demands of the mine workers. But nonetheless, the mine workers are militant because for them, it's an issue of social justice.
The BBC's Lerato Mbele speaking to us from a conference center in Cape Town at the annual Mining Indaba. Indaba is the Zulu word for gathering. Lerato, thank you very much.
Thank you.
By law, in America, the government can only borrow so much. And the country is about to bump up against the debt limit later this month unless Congress raises it. Time for a refresher on why this debt ceiling even exists, which sounds like a worthy but dull business story. So Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer takes a musical angle.
The history of the debt ceiling is a little bit like a piece of classical music. It starts out softly, kind of like Richard Wagner's Ring Opera. Congress used to approve borrowing project by project.
Wars or projects like canal building and expansion of the Navy, et cetera.
Fred Beitler is a congressional historian at Carroll University. He says eventually that incremental budgeting got too cumbersome, so the modern debt ceiling was born in the 1930s. And then the tempo of our debt ceiling ditty changes. Debt limit votes become a verdict on overall federal spending. Joseph Thorndike is a historian with Tax Analysts.
It's really like a stick that Congress uses to beat up on the executive with. And who doesn't like to have a stick?
The debt ceiling debate first crescendoed in the 1940s and 50s as Congress faced off with Presidents Roosevelt and Eisenhower. There were debt ceiling fights in the 90s, but the most serious threat of actual default came in 2011. That's where Mark Patterson enters the picture. He was Treasury Chief of Staff from 2009 until just last May. He can't even remember how many debt ceiling cliffhangers there were while he was at Treasury.
They are something of a blur to me at this point, but we had about half a dozen of them during the time that I was there.
I want to jog Patterson's memory, so I persuade him to brave the cold and take a brisk walk to the Treasury building. Patterson remembers 16-hour days and lots of takeout food.
By the time it gets there, it's always cold, though, because the Secret Service guards our building.
I ask Patterson where we are now in our musical debt ceiling journey. He says we're in an interlude. He hopes we won't get so close to defaulting again. Whatever happens, he says, we'll survive. He remembers thinking that on the darkest days of previous debt debates as he left the Treasury building late at night.
We've gotten through worse than this, and hopefully these debt limit crises will subside into history, too. At least that's what I would try to tell myself at night as I got into the car to drive home.
Then for further inspiration, Patterson would crank up his favorite debt ceiling musician, not Wagner, Jimi Hendrix. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall Genzer for Marketplace.
Little Jimmy, as you lay there in bed, and every time somebody says, who knew the Denver Broncos would get blown out like this? Over in Las Vegas, a smile plays across the face of a bookie. The amount wagered for the Super Bowl could hit $100 million this time and could break a record set in 2005. For the gambling industry, it's about hold, not the handle. It's all in the math. The more unexpected the game's outcome, the better for the bookies. The Las Vegas newspaper reports that 2 out of 3 gamblers went for Denver, and that 35-point spread would have wrong-footed many. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.